Tavis Smiley gets heated over Obama and the Black State of the Union. Black writers argue whether street lit is ghetto or fabulous or both or neither. Joining me now on the roundtable is political commentator Jasmine Canick of jasminecanick.com. And we should say you also had a film in the Pan-African Film Festival. So congratulations on that. Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog, and Issa Yulin, the creator of IssaYulin.com. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
So let me ask about Tavis Smiley. He invited the Illinois senator to join the three other leading White House candidates to his State of the Black Union 2008. Obama declined to attend. The conference is happening in New Orleans this Saturday. So last week, Smiley spoke his piece about Obama's decision.
First, I want to thank Senator Obama for his letter. And although I regret his decision, I thank him for the letter. I said on Tuesday, and I reiterate today, that I believe that this is a critical miscalculation and a missed opportunity.
Jasmine, why do you think that Tavis Smiley chose to make a pointed remark about this? And who does it help? Who does it hurt?
Look, you're speaking to someone who has been on the receiving end of Mr. Smiley's wrath. You know, when I criticized his State of the Black Union maybe 2 years ago, he called me up and gave me some strong words over the phone. So I'm not very surprised at him, you know, going very public about this. But I don't think it's necessary. As a matter of fact, I actually think it makes him look very bad by doing this. You know, the man is obviously campaigning. He has two very, very big elections coming up. He offered his wife, Tavis, respectfully declined. Let us move on. It's not the end of the world. Quite frankly, you know, we all knew what the election calendar was going to be. We know that the State of the Black Union takes place in February. It happens to fall on a day that, you know, there are other bigger things, pressing things going on. I really don't think Tavis needs to be doing this to Obama at this point.
Eric, what do you think? I mean, is this a sort of sideshow to the bigger issues about African Americans and elections? How is this going to play out, not just around the State of the Black Union, which has been a very well-respected forum, but around the conversation of what African Americans can expect from their next government? Eric? All right. We're going to pull Eric back up. So, Issa, I'm going to go to you with that question. Issa, is this something that it really affects the conversation about African-Americans in politics?
I missed the beginning part of what you were saying, Farai, but in terms of the Tavis issue, I really think I agree with the sister who spoke earlier that Tavis really ought to back off. I have nothing but profound respect for Tavis Smiley. I think he's doing a great job. I enjoy the State of the Black Union. I think it's an important event. However, I do think that he's acting as a media person and trying to sort of make his event the go-to event of the year, certainly of any election year. And I can't be mad at him for that. I just think that it's a little ridiculous to create this public furor over the fact that Obama has a busy schedule, especially because this is the most viable African-American candidate we've ever had, and part of his profound success with the campaign so far has been his ability to reach out to all of America, not the State of the Black Union, the White Union, the Purple or Green Union, but just what's going on in America today. I think we all need to kind of back off, let the brother have the spotlight, let him do his campaigning, and let him really move forward an agenda that's going to benefit all of us.
Eric, the Obama camp says that they offered Michelle as a proxy, and there's still some, you know, he said, she said over, or maybe he said, she said over what exactly has transpired. Michelle Obama has become a superstar in her own right. She's considered one of the best campaigners out on the stump. And a lot of folks thought that, for example, Bill Clinton would win that title as the best, you know, best spouse in action. But do you think that Tavis should accept Michelle Obama on stage?
I think he should have. Based on her appearance on Larry King, and I watched it again last night, she definitely has the charisma, and I think she would have pulled off whatever they are trying to accomplish with this State of Black Union event that they are having every year, which I personally, you know, I'm more into results. I'm a results-oriented type of person. I would, if I was Obama's campaign, would want to know what have they accomplished over the past few years and what solutions have they reached. Because if you're talking about the same thing year after year, what is the point of going to this event and having this event? And what's more important to me? I'm running for to become president of the U.S. of A. That's more important to me than showing up at an event that, you know, I just don't see as something that's very formidable or even results-oriented.
Jasmine, though, you know, there are so many levels of protocol. Politics has been about protocol since the rise of Imperial China, if not before. And so isn't there, you know, there's always the idea of going to pay tribute, you know, regardless of whether or not it inconveniences you. Is this politically something where it would have been a good move for Senator Obama to go and pay tribute to this event? Or is it a better calculus to just say, you know what, I'm just going to press on?
I don't need anyone paying tribute to me. If Senator Obama was going to go, he should go, and he should participate willingly. And I agree with what Eric just said beforehand about what has this event done. I will go a step further. This will probably get me another angry call from Tavis and say it hasn't done anything for me except for sell millions of copies of his covenant book.
Correct.
So thank you. So I don't think it was a miscalculation for Obama not to go. Anytime you miss out, obviously, let's be real here. It gets widespread media coverage. It's on C-SPAN. It's all over the place. Given, I think he should have accepted Michelle. I would have loved to have seen Hillary and Michelle go at it. That'd be great. You know, I think he missed out on that. But again, I think he just needs to kind of shut up and let's move forward.
All right, I'm going to move forward to another topic. And Issa, you know all about this. If you wander into the bookstore chains, you might find Toni Morrison next to True to the Game or Thugs and the Women Who Love Them or Shiesty. Those last titles are all part of a genre called street lit. And you have consistently, as a literary novelist, talked about this and also linked to a recent article by author Bridgette Davis on TheRoot.com saying that street lit could do more harm than good. How do you feel now as this debate unfolds?
Well, I'm actually happy that this debate is unfolding. My recent article in The Crisis magazine has appeared. Bridgette Davis's piece, as you mentioned, Linda Villarosa has something going on thedailyvoice.com, and of course we had Nick Childs's piece for the New York Times and Martha Southgate's for the New York Times Book Review. So these, I think, are the major articles responding to urban literature. And speaking as an individual for myself, as a literary author, one who strives to craft work that really honors our literary tradition, I have become increasingly dismayed over the years at the proliferation of street fiction. At first, honestly, Farai, it didn't really bother me that much. You know, I didn't want to be a hater. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good thing that people could self-publish. But the more this work gets turned out, the further down I think we're pushed as a people. It really is kind of like pushing drugs in some way. It can become addictive, and I think it has a certain appeal to people, but at the same time, it is no good for Black America. And at the end of the day, you know, we're trafficking in African American culture. What will be the cultural imprint of our generation of writers? You know, the challenge for all of us, I think, is to make sure that our legacy is not this urban fiction that has created such a storm.
All right. Well, you threw a lot out there. We're going to get ready to go to a break. But I'm sure that when you compare street lit to a drug, there'll be plenty of people who got stuff to say. We're speaking with Issa, Eric, and Jasmine. Jasmine Canik of jasminecanik.com. Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog. And Issa Yulin, the creator of IssaYulin.com. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We're back with our bloggers roundtable. We've got political commentator Jasmine Canik of jasminecanik.com, Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog, and Issa Yulin, the creator of IssaYulin.com. We were just talking about street lit, and Issa said that it is akin to a drug and not good for our people. Eric, what do you think?
I wouldn't go that far, but my take on that, as long as our people are reading, I'm fine with it. I mean, some of the titles are kind of out there, but again, you have a situation where the literacy rate, particularly in the Detroit area where I was born and raised, but they have such a low literacy rate. But if you could get the people to read something, that's better than them not reading at all. So I don't have a problem with the street lit with regard, you know, as long as people are reading.
Jasmine, there was actually kind of a, you know, a reverse rhyme, battle rhyme on this topic from the site Mosaic Books. And it said, this street urban lit discussion is becoming a sad commentary, not on the state of writing booksellers, literary magazines, or megachains, but on the entrenched sense of privilege writers who deem themselves literary have. The writer goes on to say, it's my hope that Ring Shout, which is an organization that Issa and other writers are involved with, was not set up solely to hate and deride hardworking people, but as a modern means to support what they believe in while treating all outside its sphere with benign respect. Now, Issa, I'm going to go to you in a second, but Jasmine, the big picture here is that this guy says this is becoming an elitist situation. Well, in some ways, writing itself, I suppose, is elitist. It's something that many people, millions and millions of people in the world can't even do. But is this discussion becoming one of us versus them, you know, the folks on the corner versus the folks in the gated community?
It sounds a little bit like that, and I have to agree with Brother Eric. You know, as long as we're reading, you know, I'm obviously here in Los Angeles, our literacy rates aren't the greatest. And if these are the books that you know, young people are reading, at least they're reading. And hopefully from there, maybe they'll go on to read other books. And I have to disagree with Issa. I don't think this is going to be our urban literature legacy. I think we've had numerous African American authors that have, you know, put, you know, out there the footprint in terms of urban literature. I think this is obviously a new genre, and if it's the genre that, you know, encourages young adults to read, well, then so be it. You know, I'd rather them read than not read.
Issa, what about Ring Shout? What is it? What are you guys trying to do?
Well, Ring Shout actually isn't even considering urban fiction in its formation, and I have to be really clear with that. And I spoke with Ron directly on the telephone after he posted that on mosaicbooks.com, and I think you saw my response to him on there. And he's somebody I consider a good friend, a real champion of literary fiction and nonfiction. And Ring Shout is not even thinking about urban fiction. The whole point of Ring Shout is to celebrate lesser-known contemporary writers of color who are ambitious in the scope and the themes expressed in their work, both fiction and nonfiction.
So right.
There's no us versus them at all happening with Ring Shout, at all, period. And there's really no us versus them from my personal point of view either. When I did the crisis interview, I talked with Chris Chambers, and what he expressed, I think I'm going to plagiarize his idea a little bit, and that is that, look, people who are writing street fiction are my sisters and brothers. And personally, one-on-one, I don't have a problem with anybody. And I'm at all of these events selling my novel. I'm talking to people. We form community with each other. I do not want an us versus them battle going on. However, I think it is important that we look closely at the work that's being produced, much of it, self-published, and the effect especially that's having on children. I have a master's in education. I've worked in our schools in Baltimore City, in New York City, and I continue to work with young people, middle school young people in Chinatown in New York and in Brooklyn. And I have to respectfully disagree with that. It is not okay for our young people to just read anything that they pick up. Now, some of this stuff is fine. If they want to read a little, you know, a book rather with an urban setting, that's fine. But we have young people who are 11, 10, 9, 13 years old who are reading stuff where every single line there's a cuss word, where people are being exploited, where there's no redemption, where there's no real plot line, where it's full of mistakes, where you're literally being cussed out on every single line of the book. And that's not a good thing for our children to be exposed to. And if you give them the opportunity to read other work that speaks to their lives with an urban setting, almost always they're going to choose the book that has a more powerful, resonant theme and is better crafted. And
but, you know, it's listening to you, because you and I know each other, we've known each other since high school.
Yeah.
You and and me, I'll point the finger right back, we're starting to sound like the people who wouldn't let us listen to Prince or something. You know, it's like, oh, it's got too much risque content. Is that just also a part of growing older, that you have a different vantage? And maybe, you know, maybe it's just generational.
I don't know. I mean, I remember I bought Two Live Crew because I wanted to sport free speech, you know, back in the day. And I don't know if I would necessarily make that choice now. So, yeah, I have gotten older. And, I mean, I've worked with kids that were born addicted to crack in our schools, our children. I've been working in our community. That's how, you know, it's why I'm not rich. I've been devoting my life to educating young people. And, you know, if I sound like a tisk tisk old person, I don't think I come off that way to the kids. I talk to him and I say, look, what do you think these words are doing to you? Don't you think they get into you?
Issa, I'm going to give one last word to Jasmine.
Okay.
Do you think that the generational issue is prevalent, even in the sense of if you try to talk to someone younger, they might not listen to you?
Yeah, I think that's a reality. You know, I also think, going back to what Issa said, I mean, I don't know very many 11 and 12 year olds that are reading these books. I got to be honest with you. I don't know very many 11 and 12 year olds. 12-year-olds, as sad as this is going to sound, that read books. But, you know, I think that, again, we got to look at the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is us reading. And, you know, and I'm in support of that.
Me too. All right. On that note, Jasmine, Eric, Issa, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I've been speaking with Jasmine Kanick of jasminekanick.com, also Eric Brown. He blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog, and Issa Yulin. She's the creator of issayulin.com.